Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 164.
This week on the podcast, Sandra Bland is the latest black life that didn't matter to police.
And in a trend no one saw coming but us, the more Hillary Clinton talks, the more everyone stops wanting to listen.
Trump continues to crush it in the polls, driving the other candidates to reality show levels of desperation.
And Louisiana takes its rightful place on the list of states with recent mass shootings. A proud day for Bobby Jindal.
Congress questions John Kerry on his thoughts on Iranian unicorns.
And Obama visits his fake homeland, Kenya, and spreads the message that gays are humans too. Kenyans remain unconvinced.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
You know what else you can find on the web?
Ron Paul message 1 through 100.
We talked about message number 49 last week because I saw it, as I mentioned last
week. We didn't think to ourselves to check the other numbers.
No.
But then my parents called me and they were like, we just saw an ad for Ron Paul message 19.
Yeah, in New
York.
And
I was like, do you think that's a different message?
No.
It's not. And so then we started trying all the numbers.
Right.
I tried Ron Paul message 6. That's a popular one for unknown reasons. Ron Paul message 8 also seemed popular on Google.
Yeah.
I went all the way up, skipping obviously, numbers up to 100. At 101, there was no website found.
Yeah.
But at 100, we were still going to hear about the currency crisis from
same
Ron
thing.
Paul. Same thing.
All 100 messages are the exact same one single message.
It's
from
curious
what we can tell.
That he's choosing to use different numbers in different media markets.
Is there a reasoning there?
Is there something extra 49-ish about California that's 19-ish about New York?
I don't know.
Like, I've been, like, racking my brain, being like, is this about the 49ers? I don't know.
I know, right?
Like, why? What else is 49-ish about us?
I don't know.
And who got Ron Paul 6? Who were the early adapters on the whole Ron Paul message front?
I don't know.
I mean, it was crazy. It's crazy. Also,
weird.
I can't... It's so weird. It's such a weird idea.
Yeah.
Like, first of all, it's weird just that he's buying ad time to advertise a website and then using numbers for that website. But also, like, who came up with the number strategy? Why did they think that would be an effective thing to do?
I have no idea.
What made them think ronpaulmessage.com is too easy for people?
Yeah.
You know what will make them curious is if there's 49 of them.
Right.
Like, my mind is struggling.
I don't know. Don't have the answer.
It's blown and struggling. I've been having such a hard time with this / like maniacally laughing to myself all week.
I know.
I just like... This is like something that I periodically have just been Googling different Ron Paul message numbers, and then I laugh out loud to myself.
Lila got here, and she was like, we have to lead with this Ron Paul message thing. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
No, but I'm with you in its insanity. But
it's insane.
Like,
it's totally insane.
Yeah, it's weird.
In any case, speaking of weird things that are happening out there, this is not weird. It's just sad.
Yeah.
We last week did not discuss the Sandra Bland death in prison that was sort of just starting to get some coverage last week.
Yeah.
This week, it's been in the news all week, and the details are just getting worse,
as you might
anticipate.
Yeah.
Another example of why driving while black continues to be a crime for no reason.
That's right. I think they got worse this week. I mean, it was sort of been a slow build, but then toward the end of the week, we got the dash cam video.
Exactly.
Of the
Or the unedited dash cam video.
Unedited, yes.
There had been a, quote, technical difficulty.
Glitches.
A glitch.
A glitch in the portions that they edited out. Right, yeah, exactly. So, anyway, but just a quick recap. She was arrested on July 10th, actually, and it was after failing to use a turn signal. And she then, quote, according to the police report anyway, became combative. We have since seen that
became combative first.
Correct, yes. So, anyway, but she was arrested, and then she was in prison for 3 days, and then committed suicide, or potentially didn't commit suicide, depending
on
who you're listening to.
Right, that's still a discussion that's happening
out there. And so she died in prison. She supposedly hung herself by a plastic bag that she was given, I think, to, like, keep her belongings or something like that.
Right.
So, anyway, she was actually being held on a charge at that point of assaulting a public servant due to her altercation with a police officer. But like we said, she was initially pulled over because for a minor traffic violation.
She didn't use a turn signal.
Right.
And basically what we sort of learned through the subsequent release of first edited dash cam videos and then supposedly unedited dash cam videos is basically like the officer like aggressively demanded that she put out her cigarette, which you are allowed to do
if it's
obscuring your visibility
or
in
any
some
sort
way.
Of like it's his right to deem whether he wants her to put that out or not.
Right.
So like he was, but it devolved quickly.
Very quickly.
From there. Very quickly. From
and then he threatens to tase her.
Right, exactly.
Which is not, that's not the natural conclusion to a conversation about your cigarette.
He's put his whole body basically into her car in an attempt to literally rip her from it.
Yeah.
So Yeah, he said he was going to light her up.
Yeah, that's the kind of language we want the police using people.
Yeah,
the people that they are charged to serve and protect.
That's right.
So in any case, then there was sort of like also subsequent releases of details about her past or her sort of state when she was arrested that were obviously just meant to discredit her.
Right. As soon,
which infuriated everyone more.
Right. As it should have. Because like
obviously,
this is,
yeah.
It's almost, and the other thing too, is it's stupid on your part because it just makes it clear as though you know that you've fucked something up.
Yeah.
Because like,
oh yeah,
it was like a very concerted effort to discredit her because like they released a preliminary toxicology report that claimed that she was like very high at the time. They released, she had apparently given two different, or they claim anyway, that she had given two different answers as to whether she had attempted to commit suicide
in
the past.
And she was, and if she one was, of those answers was yes, then they should have been watching her more carefully.
Yes, exactly. And they have two, like, they have specific cells in the prison which are monitored by cameras for people who they've put on suicide watch, and she was not in one of those.
Yeah.
So even if she had said yes at one point, she should have been
on suicide
she
watch.
She should have been on suicide
yeah.
watch. So
that's, you're not supposed to be able to kill yourself in prison.
No, that's
the
thing.
That's not part of what we set prison
right.
up for.
No, exactly. So now the video, which we said, which showed a lot of these, you know, things that we've been talking about, like how he tried to pull her out of the car or whatever. Most of the altercation takes place
off camera
because
after
he pulls
we've seen
her
out.
Right, exactly. Because he gets her out of the car and then you don't know what's happening. So that's sort of like where people are. That's where the questions are. Like, what happened there that could have,
right.
like, put
There's
her
a
into
range
the...
of theories, including that she was dead when they took her mugshot.
Right,
I
exactly.
mean, people are saying everything and anything.
She, yeah, exactly. So...
And I mean, this has really raised a discussion that I think is important about, you know, she, whether or not she committed suicide, this is still a conversation that we're having about the state committing a kind of murder.
Yes.
Because
exactly.
the state created a situation that was unstable
Correct.
And unsustainable
right.
for her.
That's
you
where...
You know, that's where this becomes a conversation about murder.
Exactly. And that is what I have sort of, you know... You can talk about these conspiracy theories whether until the cows come home. And yes, if the officer did kill her and she was already dead, then he should obviously be charged. But the fact of the matter is that this is police. It's the police department's fault, whether
yeah.
it's the specific officers, whether it was people who were supposed to be watching her in prison. She should not have died this way. And it was because of... other people's failings.
Right.
That
and it was
it
because
happened.
Of a situation that she should not have had to be dealing with in the
no,
first place.
She shouldn't have been in prison for 3 days for making an illegal traffic stop.
Yeah.
I realize it was for assaulting an officer, but she didn't.
She didn't
from
do
what
that.
We can tell, she didn't do that.
No, so that's like, you, right. Once you're I mean, like, ultimately, this was a person who was arrested for driving while black.
Correct.
And then
you or I
left to rot in prison.
Would not
we
have,
would not have gotten arrested for doing that because
no,
we would have been
we
doing
wouldn't
it
have been
while
yanked
white.
From the car.
And P.S., there are some. White drivers in LA who probably should be arrested for not signaling when they turn.
It's an epidemic.
It's an epidemic here.
Yeah.
But that's not who's getting arrested for these sorts of minor transgressions.
No.
And so this is like, this is a larger issue that has to do with police brutality. It has to do with how the police profile people of color.
Yeah, it's institutional
it's,
racism.
It's institutional racism at
course.
Its most clear and most obvious.
Yes, 100%.
So that is why this conversation is sort of like growing the way that it is, I think. And I think, you know, a lot of the time, and I've even been guilty of this in the past, like we focus this conversation on men of color because they are sort of like more likely to be in the justice system than
right.
women of color.
And they're also more likely to be, I think, feared by police officers. Like when we
right.
think about,
are,
you know, the guy who was in Ferguson or whatever, I mean, he literally wasn't even
doing
anything.
Anything.
He just
right.
looked
just being
like
black
a black man.
On a street.
Right. Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, I think though that this has sort of, allowed us to kind of refocus this issue in a, or not refocus, but broaden our discussion of this issue because
right.
black women get mistreated by the police as well.
Of course.
In ways that they absolutely shouldn't, and also have the additional burden of being women in society. So they're
oh,
getting
right.
mistreated by everyone.
Yeah.
As many women are, but especially
yeah.
women of color. So
yeah.
this is a conversation that I think has been coming for a while as we've sort of had continued reports of this kind of brutality being directed towards black men.
Yeah.
This is an example of how it's also being directed towards black women, and we really hadn't been talking about it. So now
right.
we're at least talking about that.
Yes.
So, in any case, this is an example of the endless epidemic of police killing black people for no
yes.
reason. Meanwhile, the Republicans, who have been doing nothing to address these issues,
None.
As black people are falling left, right, and center because
yeah.
of police, you know, action, and the Republicans are sort of like acting like everyone had it coming. However, this week, one white woman was killed by an undocumented person, and they fucking lost their shit.
They lost their shit. They lost all of their shit. And not only did they lose their shit, but they passed something faster than they've ever passed in their entire
existence.
We can't
pass a gun control law in this country because white people need their guns.
But we can take all of the federal funding for law enforcement away from sanctuary cities.
Right.
Because that's where this happened. It happened in San Francisco, which is a sanctuary city. So,
welcome to America, where everything is nonsense.
That's it.
But yeah, this is like, there was a woman in San Francisco who was killed by an undocumented person.
Yeah.
And it was like, immediately they wanted to strip all the police funding from San Francisco, which, by the way, doesn't solve the problem of people being murdered places.
No.
That's not helping anyone not get murdered by undocumented or documented people.
Not.
Really, no one
taking away
helped
law
by that situation.
Money? Nope, not a one.
So that's a classic GOP strategy to these things. But that just goes to show you that this really is an institutional racism problem. It's not just a problem of, like, some people being bad and some people being good.
No.
Like, random white people get killed and everyone fucking flies off the handle.
That's right.
Unless, I will say that we do love a good mass shooting even if white people die. You know, like, we have failed to do anything. There were plenty of non-racially motivated mass shootings that happened in
the last
few years that we still did nothing about.
Yes. Because we're good at ignoring things.
We're good at ignoring things. Yeah. We're good at seizing token examples of fake things that aren't happening out there.
Well, this was the undocumented. That was the key fact in this story here was that there was an
undocumented
person.
Yeah, they'll do anything.
And that it took place in San Francisco,
They were probably like, see?
Haha.
Like, this is not happening out there. This is not an epidemic.
No.
This is an isolated incident.
No, it's not.
In any case, I want to use this moment to revisit our discussion of the Netroots Black Lives Matter protest.
Sure.
I have been thinking about it all week.
Yeah.
I'm driving myself crazy because, as you know, we were both fairly critical of that protest last week.
Yeah.
And I have been feeling very guilty about that because I love a good disruptive protest. That's my jam.
I know.
And so I saw this happen and there was something about it that struck me, you know, and made me uncomfortable and I couldn't put my finger on it. So I sort of was broadly critical of it, and I have a new, more enlightened series of thoughts about it.
I don't.
Brent
doesn't.
Carry on. Brent doesn't. Brent stands by his statements. As I've been watching the coverage of it unfold in the progressive community, which is my community,
where we live.
Right? Mm-hmm. I have decided that this was actually like a really effective protest in that it created a conversation about racial inequality that was not being addressed in the white progressive community, and it sort of forced everyone to think about it.
Oh yeah, and I will give you and them that.
Right.
Don't
that's,
dispute.
And I think, I mean, that, you know, the women who organized it were on Democracy Now!, and that's basically what they said its intention was. This is, by the way, this is a fairly new group that is kind of like trying new kinds of action that we haven't seen in a while, that they haven't tried before, and this is their first presidential cycle, so they're experimenting a little.
They're getting their protest sea legs.
They're getting their protest sea legs, exactly.
Yes.
And I think that in terms of creating the conversation they were trying to create, this was an extremely effective thing that they did.
Yeah.
So I take back any criticism that I had created about, or that I had, you know, that I had garnered, not, I didn't garner the criticism, I don't even have the word, but I take back any criticism that I had levied at them about what the sort of strategy here was.
Yeah.
It was effective for their aims.
It was effective. And my only issue, and this is what I just said to you when we were talking about it earlier, is that it was effective, and I felt like it could have been as effective, and I think it still would have been the story coming out of that whole Netroots Nation event had they still let them answer. And I was watching it, and I mean, you know, they interrupted Martin O'Malley, which was fine, and that was sort of like they were trying to be disruptive, obviously.
That's
like,
what you, that's the strategy.
You do. That was the strategy.
You create a situation where no one can react the right way, and then you're like, you're going to react the right way.
And the leader of that, who I assume was
the one who was on
Democracy Now! Probably, you know, bogarted the microphone for at least 25 minutes.
Right.
I mean, she gave a speech.
And as you mentioned, this was
she gave a speech to the convention.
This was a forum about a different issue entirely.
And then said specifically, we are here because we want to hear the candidates answer these questions. Right. And then continued to shout for the next hour, and then nobody got to say anything. Right. So I think that her speech and them shouting them down still would have been sort of like, oh my God, I can't believe they did that. We need to have that discussion as a progressive right. people coming out of Netroots Nation. That still would have been a story had they let them be there. But yeah, I mean, I heard, you know, Bernie Sanders got asked this week at one point whether he was, like, blindsided by them. And he was like, well, I was there to talk about immigration. So, yes, I was blindsided right, by them. Like, it wasn't even, it's not even that they, like, blindsided them about the subject. But, like, it was sort of, like, blindsiding that they were sort of even, you know, that's not what the candidates right. were there to speak
it,
about.
It was, like, really blindsiding.
Yeah.
Here's the one criticism I do maintain, and I finally have figured out how to articulate that criticism, because in my own mind, I was having a hard time articulating what rubbed me the wrong way about... Well, just knocked the mic, got excited.
Yeah.
What was rubbing me the wrong way about the strategy as a whole? Because obviously, this is... civil disobedience is something I can always get behind.
Sure.
And like you said, we're talking about it this week, so it worked. I think that we had to be talking about this, and that we were not, because the progressive community is... still a community where white privilege rules and, yeah. you know, white people get to determine the agenda to some degree. So I think that that is where I see that, you know, my criticism was maybe unwarranted. The criticism that I still have and that I think I will continue to have until this issue gets taken up more broadly with the rest of the Democratic slate, I don't even consider the Republicans legitimate people to have this conversation with.
Yeah.
They're actual Looney Tunes and they are literally getting by on racism. There's not room for this conversation in their caucus and it's not going to happen.
No.
And I think that's a separate conversation, by the way, to have about how you can get like racist white people to think about why this issue actually does matter to them. And I think it's going to have to happen a little differently than it happens in the progressive community, because you're going to have to think about how you can get people that don't know how to talk about race to talk about race. White people don't know how to talk about race. We don't even have the vocabulary to talk about race. We've spent our whole lives avoiding it. So that's a separate conversation, I think, to have. Then that's maybe the job. That's maybe a place for the white progressive community to step in and like play a leadership role in something that kind of helps create awareness on this issue. Side rant that I just went on. Here's what rubbed me the wrong way about it. The thing that has gotten me really excited about the Bernie Sanders campaign is that for the first time I'm seeing, there are sort of three poles of inequality that I like, that are, you know, when we talk about intersectional, you know, inequality, we're talking about three basic genres of inequality. We're talking about gender, we're talking about race, and we're talking about the economy, economic inequality. And for the first time, like, ever, we have a candidate that's truly addressing economic inequality in a very articulate way, and he is getting feedback for it. Like people are responding to it.
Yeah.
And I know that isn't enough. Like that's not enough of a conversation to have about inequality.
It's like why saying all lives matter isn't enough
when
you should be saying Black Lives Matter.
Exactly. But and it's also, you know, I mean, someone that I was sort of, this frustration came to me because I was reading a lot of Facebook comments that were very critical of Bernie Sanders in the aftermath of this.
Right.
And to some degree, I absolutely like understand where they were coming from, because he really wasn't talking about race. He comes from a state that's almost entirely white. So it hasn't even been a part of his sort of world for a long time. That hasn't been a concern of his constituents for most of his political life. So even though he's from Brooklyn, he grew up in a diverse city and has a civil rights record, and people don't really know what it is.
Right.
They sort of perceive him as this white liberal, you know, great hope that doesn't sort of like talk about the things they want to talk about. Here's the thing, though. I don't like having a Black Lives Matter conversation at the expense of an economic inequality conversation.
I
want to be able to have both. And I think
they're intertwined.
They're intertwined, just as conversations about gender are intertwined with all of these things.
Of course.
And I think that the thing that rubbed me the wrong way about this specific incident, because none of the heavy hitter candidates were forced to answer for this kind of, for this, you know, event.
Yeah.
This was just Martin O'Malley, who's a non-entity, and Bernie Sanders, who's running on a wing and a prayer. I get that he's like, that he's gaining popularity, but the entire backlash to this event got directed at him. He's maybe the only person who even has a civil rights record to speak on at all.
At all.
And he's also the only person that's addressing any element of systemic inequality at all.
Yeah.
And I don't want to see that conversation derailed, you know, over another conversation about inequality. I think there has to be room for both of them.
Yep.
And I think that this choice of event and this choice of approach managed to create awareness about one issue at the expense of another.
Yes.
I've been seeing a lot of critical conversation about his approach to inequality, which is when he focuses on the economy.
Yeah.
That's obviously, as we've just said, not enough. He needs to broaden his focus.
And he's
starting to, absolutely.
Yeah.
But it's not focusing on the economy is not a negative. It's just not enough of a positive.
Right.
No one else is focusing on economic inequality. No
right.
one else is focusing on any kind of inequality. Even Hillary Clinton rings very false when she talks about gender equality because she's actively supporting economic policies that still keep women down. So he's the only candidate who has anything to offer in a complimentary way to this conversation.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, these Black Lives Matter, this organization, is also very active on the minimum wage. They're active on a lot of economic inequality issues because they have to be, because these are intersectional issues and they are all related. So in any case, my continued frustration with it, and the reason I think I had this sort of like knee-jerk reaction to it that I now realize maybe wasn't entirely warranted, but was like maybe 50% warranted,
sure.
was because I don't want to see one conversation about inequality happen at the expense of another. I want to see all of
all
these
of
conversations
happen.
Collectively. And because ultimately, when we have conversations, who loses out when we have the conversations at the expense of the other conversations? It's minorities and women.
Yeah.
You know, the economic inequality issue doesn't get play because we live in a corporatist society, but it's sort of like, it's still kind of like a thing white people can get into because it affects white people, you know,
sure.
like, and these are all conversations that are about really like giving people the vocabulary to talk about what is frustrating them and what is frustrating you. So like people already have the vocabulary to talk about why economic inequality is frustrating them and they don't have the vocabulary to talk about why gender inequality frustrates them, especially men, because men don't have to think about gender all day.
Yeah.
You know, they're not forced to, and white people don't have to think about race because they live in a society where they don't, it's not like they have like a sense of community with white people. You know, like,
no.
Do you feel like a sense of community with other white people? I like cringe thinking about the white community. It's like a horrible group of people that, you know, like, so you don't feel like there's no positive association with it. Just as, you know, being men, you just get to be men. You don't have to walk around thinking, I wonder if I'm being treated this way because I'm a man. Like, that's not what you have to think about. So in any case, this is about creating a vocabulary that everyone can use about all of these issues, but they all relate. And so we can't have one conversation at the expense of another conversation.
Yeah.
That is what still frustrates me about it. So in any case, I just felt like I should clarify my thoughts on that issue because they have been bugging me all fucking week. It's all I've been thinking about. I hate when I don't approve of a protest. Like when I say something critical of a protest, I really like it. It like eats me up inside. So in any case, moving on.
Yes.
To Clinton's bad polling numbers.
Bad poll numbers. Oh boy. Yes. This has everyone sort of in a bit of a panic this week.
Mm-hmm.
Except for me, because I don't give a fuck.
No, I feel great about this. It has the establishment, the man.
It has the establishment. And because, you know, I think what the big issue here is that it is not that she's losing, because she's not. I think everyone still seems to think that she's probably going to get the nominee. Most people think that. I mean, we've talked about reasons why she might not be. But there are, it's not so much, it's her favorable and unfavorability numbers that are the problem here. And she is like desperately underwater in all of the key states, basically in Iowa, in Virginia, in Colorado, in New Hampshire, in where else did they poll this? I think there's one other place I'm missing, but like, you know, big sort of early states and also battleground states. She's like 20 points underwater with, you know, they're all sort of like in the range of like 37 favorable to 57 unfavorable. That's sort of like about where they're averaging all of them. And that is not good.
No.
Even if you end up getting the nomination, like she may win the primary because within the party, she has good favorable, unfavorable.
Right.
This is registered voters.
Right.
So, you know,
but
that's
is,
the problem.
But
it's like, are we, are we putting,
the general.
I was going to say, are we putting all of our eggs
into
in a basket,
losing basket.
That in the, into a basket that everyone hates?
P.S. We are.
We are.
We've been saying that for months. I don't know where
years.
You guys have been years, but that's what we've been saying.
Yeah.
And I think it's also worth noting that the only candidate currently in the field who's not underwater in favorability ratings is Bernie Sanders.
And when we say in the field, we mean
the entire field.
Field.
All 17 Republicans
and
all
five
Democrats.
Right, exactly. So and he's got fairly low numbers just in terms of the amount of people who can have an opinion on him are still low, although they've gone way
they've
up.
Gone way up.
Because
they've,
the last
I think
time
doubled.
That they, yeah, the last time that they polled this, he had 24% of people had enough information to have an opinion on him, and now 44% do. And his favorability rating doubled since the last time that it went from 12 to 24. And his unfavorable went up as well, too. But that's among all registered voters.
Right.
So, of course, some Republicans decided that they hated him because they would.
Because he's a socialist.
Right, exactly. So, that's not really surprising. But
But I think what's important here is the sort of trends that it represents.
Trends.
You know, Clinton's favorability rating is going down. As we have always said, the more people hear from her, the more they remember they don't like her that much.
That's right.
She's kind of a Republican. She's kind of hawkish.
Right.
She kind of doesn't deal well with a lot of the topics that are like on people's minds right now, like the economy and economic inequality.
Yeah.
So she is someone who the more her mouth is open, the more her unfavorability rating rises.
Right.
And Bernie Sanders is someone who the more people hear about him, the more people like him.
Right. So the other thing is that she is also in theoretical matchups against the top three Republicans, not even Trump, actually.
Right. But the top three
Walker,
legitimate Republicans.
Right. Which are Walker, Rubio, and Bush. At least that's who we're considering.
Right.
Rubio is not even really
in the field at this point, but okay.
And she loses to them in Iowa, Colorado, and Virginia. And she by a fairly sizable margin, too. She's losing by, like, anywhere between, like, 6 and 10 points there, too. So it's, like, not even really close. And actually, Sanders did as well in most of those states, except Virginia. I think Hillary did a little bit better, which I guess isn't really
surprising.
They're
an insidery state.
Yeah.
You know, they're the Washington state.
So that is cause for concern, obviously,
sure.
too. And, you know, her camp is obviously like, well, it's early, which it is. But I think it's less than the head-to-head matchups. The other numbers, I think, should be more concerning.
Yeah.
Because
it's like, it's early unless your numbers have been tanking from the get-go and started super high.
Right.
If you start as the inevitable winner and you end up being a person who's in a primary with a Democrat, with a socialist who might beat you, you're not, you know...
Yeah.
Like, you're not heading in the right direction.
No, you're not.
It's not like more people are learning about you and loving you. You're more unlikable the more people know about you, and that's not a position you want to be in at this early in the race.
No, it's not. And she is still, she's got a pretty sizable lead over Sanders in Iowa. It's 55-26, so she's ahead by 29. But the last time that, this is from an NBC poll, and the last time that they polled those two head-to-head, she was ahead by 61%. So he's cut that in more than half. And in New Hampshire, she's only had 47-34, which is actually fairly close. And not the last time that they polled that, she was almost 50 points ahead.
Yeah.
So that has been cut like by 2/3 almost. So it's getting close and it's getting fast. I mean, we have to remember that Iowa is in February.
Right.
I think so many... This seems to, for some reason, or maybe we're just caring about it earlier. I don't know. But like, this seems to be like, or maybe it's because there's more candidates, but it's like hotter and heavier
than
early
than
I feel like
over the summer before the Iowa primary.
I mean, it's the summer. Nothing. It's usually like the
we're supposed to sleep because it's hot out in the summer.
It's desperately hot,
guys,
even right now.
So fucking hot. I can't
sweating
even
our balls off. In my apartment that has the air conditioner
like,
turned on.
It's a nightmare, guys. It is humid, first of all.
Gross.
I didn't move to Southern California
so
that I could have 90-degree weather with humidity.
No.
I could be in New York City having more fun and eating better food if that's what I wanted to be doing. It's like, what's even going on here?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, all of this prompted my mom to start making a list of people she thinks could be drafted if Hillary totally crashes and burns.
Yeah, I guessed a pretty decent number.
I know. I was guessing pretty well when I was on the phone with her earlier.
She had some ringers in there, though.
She did have some ringers in there. I know. And then there were a couple people that I was like, this person is too boring, and I've already forgotten who they are.
Right.
Like, there were people on the list who... Ed Markey's great, but like...
Sure. And I'm sure Amy Klobuchar is great, too.
Right.
She's probably a very lovely person. She's
not
from
great
Minnesota.
Enough.
She's probably...
Very polite, I'm sure.
Kill you with kindness.
Yeah.
But...
Minnesotans, very polite people.
Not happening.
But that's not...
You.
She's not going to be the president. But it was a list... She did... I was excited that she put Al Franken on the list.
I love that.
My dad was like, he's not going to be the president. And I was like,
no,
let's dream together, guys.
Let's
dream
it.
Together.
That's right.
Because he's... Really what the list was people that are slightly to Hillary's left, but are still sort of in bed with the Democratic establishment. You know, I do see a world, and I don't like admitting this, but here I am admitting it. I do see a world in which the Democratic establishment is like, we have to beat Bernie Sanders because he doesn't answer to us. And we can't have an uncontrollable candidate like this being the person that represents our party. They really don't control him.
Yeah.
That's why he's able to say all these things that they don't approve of.
Right.
But so I do see a world in which they end up having to draft someone to Hillary's left.
Right. And it has to be because...
And obviously Liz Warren is the goal.
Right. And her failure is obviously to her left. So if she crashes and burns here,
you have to go left.
You can't draft Joe Biden in her stead.
No.
Because, like,
and
that's
Al Gore somebody that they're talking about. But I also don't even see a world in which that's feasible.
No.
Al Gore,
he's good on the environment, but it's expected that all Democrats be good on the environment now. 20 years ago, it was...
lost a presidential election that he won.
Right.
He's like the ultimate loser. Like, I get that he's great on the environment, but he's still a Clinton Democrat.
Yeah.
Yes, he's not...
He lost even when he won.
He lost even when he won.
Yeah.
Like, that's not... You know that someone on the far left would not have put up with that bullshit.
No.
Like, that's not something that would have happened. So in any case, and he's a man who chose Joe Lieberman as his running mate.
Ugh.
P.S.
Yeah.
That shows bad judgment in and of itself. In any case, I don't even know what party Joe Lieberman belongs to anymore. I mean, he's out of office, well, so who cares? Right. But, like, he switched at a certain point.
Yeah.
Because probably they were like, you know what? We don't like you anymore. Stop
that's
bothering
exactly
us.
What happened.
In any case, Kirsten Gillibrand was on the list. That was also, I think she'd be a great president, if anyone's listening.
I'm still, and I brought this up, and you said that he was on the list, but my first go-to was Sherrod Brown.
Sherrod Brown.
Who I feel like is where it's at, because he's sort of an Elizabeth Warren-esque person. He's from Ohio. I mean, people have been sort of speculating as to whether he might, you know, people could still get in.
Yeah,
they wouldn't even have to be
so early, guys.
They wouldn't even have to be drafted. I mean, we told you last week that, you know, in this whole, the Biden people are saying that he's going to announce at the end of September. That seems like a crazy long time from now because everybody else has been running.
Time,
but it's also like that's when you
that's when you normally announce, yeah,
right?
No, I feel like not only is there time for people to get in, but I feel like the reason that so few people have gotten in has to do with the fact that they had effectively drafted Hillary. And they had pushed all of these other potential names out.
Yeah.
And I think at a certain point, they may have to open the field up again when they realize that they need some backup.
Well, I think the people are going to realize themselves.
I mean, right. No, but I mean, like, there is a degree to which you can, as a sort of Democrat who's in the Democratic fold, decide to run.
Yes.
But that degree is severely limited by your ability to fundraise while in that position.
True.
They have the power to make it impossible for you to fundraise.
That's
they don't have the power to make it impossible for Bernie Sanders to fundraise because he wasn't fundraising using their system anyway.
Ever. Yeah.
But like the DNC doesn't control his fundraising. He's fundraising all on his own. He's a real renegade candidate.
Right.
He's the true maverick.
That's
guys.
Right. Yes.
But all of these other candidates would need DNC help, and that is how they can control who comes in and out of the race. And I see a world in which Clinton crashes and burns, O'Malley just doesn't generate the excitement that he needs to, because he's obviously drafting her, as we've said.
Yeah.
Like, drafting in the biking sense, not in the drafting in the war sense. But I do see a world in which the Democrats suddenly, in September, have to be like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Like, who can we get up in here?
Yeah.
How do we deal with this?
Yeah.
So, in any case, P.S. The AFL-CIO, the AFT last week endorsed Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, we talked about that.
Because Randy Weingarten is
like Hillary's
angling
bestie.
For
all the other unions were pissed that they did it. We're just going to write that off as like a non-thing.
That was a non-thing because it was just like a personal interest that Randy Weingarten had in being besties with Hillary Clinton.
It's not a real endorsement.
It's not. Yeah. And also, a lot of teachers were
not happy about
pissed
that.
About this.
Yeah.
The AFL-CIO, however, as we've said, there's been some dissension in the ranks.
Right.
Because the real labor candidate here is Bernie Sanders.
Right.
That's clear.
Right.
To anyone with a brain. Now, obviously, the AFL-CIO has to play the power game to some degree. Like, they kind of have to get up behind the candidate who's going to win for the Democrats because they are the sort of the organizing force of Democratic voters. Like, they're the super PAC of the Democratic.
And there had been a lot of speculation that they may endorse early this time around because of the Hillary sort of behemoth candidacy.
Right.
Like, let's just, like, get behind and, like, let's just make
the
this
Chuck
shit
Schumer
happen,
strategy,
basically. Right,
as
exactly.
I like to call it.
Because
he's one person who said it. By the way, I'm blaming him for all of this as if he's the only person that ever said this.
He's not. But
he's not.
Was,
but he was up, he was out there early saying it.
Yeah,
and he
was.
Should pay for that.
Yeah,
anyway,
I agree.
On.
Anyway, so they had a meeting, like one of their board basically like had some sort of meeting this week basically that decided
the executive council.
Yes, exactly. Unanimously to delay an endorsement until speaking with all the candidates, and everybody pretty much assumes it's because they need to get Hillary sort of like locked down on the TPP and some
and
of these other issues.
And they're speaking to a bunch of candidates at next week's meeting.
Right, exactly. So yeah,
including
this was
Huckabee.
Huckabee, I know
people.
He's the only Republican
Maybe
coming.
Huckabee, but we have been talking about what a disappointment Huckabee's been.
We literally,
because
right before we started this
right
podcast.
Right before we started this podcast, we were having that conversation because Mike Huckabee was someone that we, and oddly, the person who is being this person in the Republican field is Donald Trump,
which
is bothering us.
Well, it's bothering, yes.
Mike Huckabee was a person that we thought was a real viable candidate for the Republicans. Obviously, we hate him. He's a bigot. Whatever.
Right.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Like, but he was viable because he was campaigning in 2008 on some very progressive economic policy.
Right.
Very populist economic
yes.
policy. Possibly fascist economic policy. Whatever. Splitting hairs. who cares?
Sure. Well, this is the thing. I mean, there's obviously, there's a couple different brands of populism, obviously. Right. And this was we have always said
that this was a
right-wing
version of populism.
Right, we have, right, exactly. And, you know, they, and
but,
like
but
we said,
populism
Donald Trump
is what's going to win the day.
Exactly.
Whatever kind of populism it is.
That's why Donald Trump is winning right now.
And that's why Donald Trump's winning right now. Because the
Mike
man
Huckabee
does not care
went the
for free trade.
Insane, crazy, loony Christian route when all the signs were
pointed
there.
Pointed to populist. No, and here's the thing. He could have kept being a lunatic. He was always a bigoted lunatic.
Right.
That never was not part of his agenda.
But he needed to stake his claim.
But he needed to stake his claim in the populist economic arena. He would have been the first candidate and the most credible candidate to do it because he's the only one who's done it before successfully.
Right.
And instead, he's just gone full crazy.
Yeah.
He's not talking about the economy at all. He's only talking about nonsense like transgender people raping your young
whatever
child in a bathroom. I mean, like, fake things he's made up. Yep. And how he wishes that he could have been groping women in his high school by pretending to be a woman or whatever.
Oh, that's
you know.
Right. Yeah,
I mean, he's telling disturbing stories about himself. Yeah. But, I mean, he's not talking about his real bread and butter issues. And I am so disappointed in him.
I know.
Because
especially
this was his chance. This was his year.
I know.
Why jump into the race as Mike Huckabee if you're not going to seize on that moment?
We're just selfishly disappointed because we said that he was going to win.
What a great candidate in the general he would be.
I know. And then here we are.
Here we
it's
are.
Never going to happen.
Never going
to
happen.
But he is going. I commend
him. I'm excited about this
for doing this.
Yes.
Yes.
No. And I think, and that's you know the sort of hole that he's left in the Republican Party is unfortunately / kind of entertainingly being filled by Donald Trump because he's an anti-free trade guy.
That's the
and
thing.
You know
and
what?
So many
Tea Party is ripe for the picking, as we've always said, by the far left, and it's because they are concerned about the same economic issues as the far left.
Correct.
They just have more selfish ways of addressing them.
Well, and that's the thing that I don't think a lot of people realize is that I think that, you know, obviously at some point I think that he's going to have to tone down his rhetoric a little bit. But I think the people who are just sort of like, you know, vaguely paying attention to what's going on know Donald Trump as the person who is like, you know, the racist against
brown
people.
As racist as they wish
people,
someone would be.
Right? But what I don't think they realize is that he is also getting, I would assume, a sizable amount of his support from people who are backing his anti-free trade.
Yeah. People on the far right don't like free trade either.
Because that's his other big issue that he's talking about right now. He's talking about his hatred of Mexicans.
Right.
And he's talking about his hatred of free trade.
Yeah.
Those are his things
right now.
The two
hates. The two Donald Trump hates.
Yeah. And they were, you know who they were talking to on Meet the Press this morning about this? Pat Buchanan.
Of course.
Who ran a very credible campaign on the very same thing.
Yeah. Was on the right.
Hatred against Mexicans.
Right.
And
hatred
anti-
of free trade.
Yeah. NAFTA. Yeah.
That's,
I mean.
That's. It's been done before, guys.
There's almost
successfully.
There's a path for this.
There. No, that's, you know, when the Tea Party first kind of came out, I was so frustrated. And this was one of my great rants in life is always about how an information vacuum creates rumors that you then can't sink.
Yeah.
And I felt like the left created an information vacuum so that wing nuts on the far right didn't realize that the Tea Party was not the populist sort of like renegade group that they thought it was and was actually just like a cover for corporate America. But those people were ripe for the picking by the left because those people agree with a lot of the same things.
That they were like, initially, I mean, it turned into sort of like a racist, like lunatic plant crop of people, but they were initially pissed about the bank bailout.
Exactly. And who
they were mad
was
at Bush.
About
they
that?
Started in 2007 while
because
Bush was
they
the
were
president.
Mad at Bush.
They
and
turned into
who
Obama
else was pissed about
Kenyan
the bailouts?
Racist haters, but
the far left.
The far left.
And you know what? It's
you and
a
I
lot
have talked about this for as long
for
as we've
long
been
as,
on the podcast.
As long as time has gone on. I mean, as, for as long as it's been an issue, we've been talking, even personally, we've been talking about it since before the podcast.
I know.
It's just like, that's always been one of my great frustrations about how that whole situation shook out.
I agree.
But I feel like this is another example of how that group of people on the far left, what they are lacking is information. They're not, they have priorities that are not totally out of whack if you discount the fact that they've been sort of scared and it's fear that's causing them to hate everyone.
Yeah.
It's fake fear that's been drummed up by idiots.
Yeah.
But like the fear is not as important as the economic argument. And and the fear can be overcome because the fear was based on lies in the first place.
Yeah, I agree.
It's just communication and it's, we don't have to, you know, like there was a This American Life a while ago about, you know, people who had family that had like drastically different political views than them and sort of like getting down to the bottom of what was at the basis of their differences. And there was nothing at the basis of their differences. They all wanted the same things and they just disagreed on how to get them. And the far right people were kind of selfishly afraid of everyone. There was a big fear factor. And the far left was sort of like you know, a lot more sort of like expansive in how they wanted to give these, you know, they wanted everyone to have the ability to have the same happiness because they saw that selfishly as a thing that would benefit them.
Yeah.
Ultimately, everyone is voting selfishly. But on the left, you can vote selfishly and think to yourself, you know what? If everyone's taken care of, I'm a lot less likely to be like raped and murdered in a corner if no one has an incentive to do that.
Right.
If everyone has food and shelter and a job, then like I won't have to deal with the blowback of living in a world where inequality creates, you know, social issues.
Right.
And the right sort of thinks, if I keep myself, fortress myself away from these people and kill all the black people and deport all the Mexicans, then I'll be safe because everyone will be like me.
Right.
And like you could make everyone like you if you were on the left, or you can decide that you should kill everyone who's not like you if you're on the right. But ultimately, you just want to live a happy, you know,
the
sort
dream
of,
is the same.
The dream is the same. Yeah. So in any case, I feel like the Donald Trump people are bothering me because we should have taken those people.
Yes.
We should have stolen those people and been like, you don't have to be racist.
I agree.
There's no reason.
I agree.
In any case, that was a long rant about not anything that we'd written. Yeah.
But I was going to say, the moral of the story is
the moral of the story
everybody is all the, you know, the Beltway people are taking this as like a huge sort of like, you know, knock against Clinton that this AFL-CIO endorsement is not going to probably
We got here through unions.
Yes.
That's how we got there.
That's right. Yes.
Speaking of
It made sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, we were just following the train of thought.
That's right. That's what we do.
That's what we do here. Especially today. We seem to be going on a lot. I'm going on a lot of side rants today.
Wow, it's fine.
I've been thinking so much all week about this stupid Netroots thing, and it's really like
it's gotten your brain jumbled.
It's gotten my brain jumbled. It's gotten me all worked up about all sorts of things.
But Hillary, we found out on Friday, actually, is she's going to go before the Benghazi subcommittee with Trey Gowdy.
What's going to happen?
I don't know. It's exciting.
It is exciting.
Yeah. Although, maybe it won't happen.
It might not happen because
they're not totally agreed on it. She has said that she would do it, but through her lawyer, she said that the date couldn't be changed.
Right.
And also that they had to sort of like agree to like parameters of questioning, which they have already said that they're obviously not going to do. So in theory, she's going before them. It wouldn't shock me at all if she doesn't.
Right.
So that's the news from the left in terms of presidential politics. Right. Now we're going to go to news from the right, which is much more exciting, by the way.
Yeah. Much more exciting.
Yeah.
To begin with, Trump has started attacking Scott Walker in what is going to be the world's greatest infighting matchup.
Yeah, it's perfect because, you know, Walker has been leading by a fairly sizable margin in Iowa for a while now. I mean, months, basically. He's really been the only leader in Iowa that we've had, and it's been anywhere between sort of like 4 and 7%. And when you figure none of them have more than 20,
that's
a lot.
It's a lot.
Yeah. So anyway, but now we've got a new poll out this week, and they're basically tied in Iowa. It's 19 Walker, 17 Trump. And then the
and
only
Trump
other,
is leading.
Right.
Everywhere else.
Yeah.
By the way. So
this is
not, like, he has been not leading in Iowa all this time, but he's been leading
in
New Hampshire.
He's leading in, I think we talked about North Carolina. Yep. Nationally, he's leading. So he's just been lagging in Iowa, but he is no longer lagging in Iowa anymore. Yeah. So this is troublesome for Scott Walker, who is banking on Iowa, by the way, because Scott Walker doesn't do well in New Hampshire. He's from the Midwest. He is sort of like the type of person, sort of like a Tim Pawlenty he's a better candidate than Michelle Bachmann, but he is the type of person who has to win Iowa.
Yeah.
Like, he's the person who, if he comes out of there and he's lost to Donald Trump and is close in second or third place with George Bush, he doesn't have there's no path remaining for him.
Yeah.
So, this is bad news.
Bad news.
Bad news.
And also, Trump, guys, Trump is like basically the Chris Christie of this election now. I mean, he's not somebody that Iowans are ultimately going to wind up liking, but it's crazy to me that he's even polling this high in Iowa, being the asshole that he is.
Right, you know? Exactly. Well, that's the thing.
I think he might be someone that comes across as really nice in person, because my mom was listening to a report from someone in Iowa about various candidates they've met. As you know, everyone in Iowa gets to personally meet every candidate out there. Get your picture taken. And she was talking about how nice Donald Trump was. And I was like,
I don't know if I buy that.
That seems crazy. But then I was also like, you know, this was in the context of my mom and I discussing how Bernie Sanders is kind of curmudgeonly. And that's actually what I think is making him effective.
Totally.
He's angry about something that we are all angry about. So we don't need him to be nice.
And it seems real.
It seems real.
Yeah.
Like, we don't need him to be nice. Hillary Clinton is a person who's lovely in person, but just doesn't come across as nice or interesting in sort of speechery land. But Donald Trump being a sort of good one-on-one campaigner is concerning to me.
Yeah.
Guys, very concerning.
Yeah.
Anyway, His numbers went up after those McCain comments of last week.
Yes. Yes, because the polling took place over, like, the span of a week that included, like, the latter half of the week.
Guys,
was after the McCain.
This is the party that claims they're the party of the military.
I know. Well, it went down in New Hampshire. I just think nobody in Iowa really sort of was ever super into John McCain. So I guess I'm not
totally shocked.
But he's, like, not... He was too moderate for them. He wasn't crazy enough. So it's sort of, like, knocking John McCain in Iowa. It's not,
sort of a safe...
hurt you. Right. Yeah. But anyway... In New Hampshire, Trump is ahead, 21, to Bush's 14, to Walker's 12. They're the only ones who are in double digits there.
And then who's right up on their tail in single digits, but in fourth place?
John Kasich.
Boring Ohio man, John Kasich.
Our dark horse.
Our dark horse candidate.
Yeah.
Already in fourth place in New Hampshire.
Yeah.
What is happening in the world, guys?
I don't know.
This race is so exciting.
Right.
This Republican primary is, like, killing
it.
It's
so genius.
It's so genius.
Because not only is it so good, but the fact that Donald Trump has gotten into this race and is, like, taking up so much of the airspace is causing all of the rest of them to have to, like, out-insanify each other.
Crazy ripple effects,
yeah,
guys.
So, and that's what's really exciting. Because,
yes,
like, Donald Trump, if just by himself, would be exciting enough. But the fact that the fallout of the Trump
been great.
The Trump factor
this
is where it's at.
This week, we had some great internet videos.
Oh, my God.
That,
the best.
I mean, if you think that Ron Paul Message 49 is an exciting internet phenomenon,
it's got nothing on
you have
this
no
shit.
Idea what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Rand Paul, son of Ron Paul,
mm-hmm,
who actually is running for president, made this crazy video of him taking a chainsaw to the tax code.
That's right. Yeah. And you can go to, like, randpaul.com and vote on how to kill the tax code.
Yeah.
He was putting it in a wood chipper. He lit it on fire. He took a chainsaw to it. He was wearing a shirt that said Detroit Republican.
It was a weird situation. Everything was weird about that video.
But, like, seeing him, and it was like a solo electric guitar playing the Star Spangled Banner in the background.
Like, feel like I've always wondered, like, who are the people that are like, the tax code is just too damn long.
I know. Well, that's his main talking point.
I know it's one of his.
He wants to get it to one page.
One page.
That's his thing. Yeah.
He wants a flat tax.
Well, yeah.
That's what he's not saying. Those aren't the words that he's saying, but he wants a flat tax. And as we know, flat taxes are regressive.
Right.
Moving on, though, who are the people that are sitting around like, it's that the tax code is just too damn complicated.
God, I've always wanted to take
a chainsaw. I've always wanted to read the whole thing, but I just can't. So I want to destroy it with a chainsaw.
Right.
Like, this is such a weird,
so weird
audience that he's doing this
exactly
for.
And then Lindsey Graham got into the action, and he's too boring to even have an opportunity to do this. That's the thing that I don't think Donald Trump is always thinking about, and I sort of like that he's not thinking about it, but, like, he's given a lot of these people, you know, more airtime than they should have gotten. Because he, you know, Lindsey Graham had a pretty great video this week where he was, like, destroying his cell phone in, like, 100 different ways with, like, he, you know, hit it with a golf club and he, like, put it in a blender and, like, it was actually sort of funny.
Right.
But the only reason, like, why that got any internet play is because he was destroying his cell phone because Donald Trump had given his cell phone out, like, at a campaign event in South Carolina. Now, Lindsey Graham is, like, pulling, like, at, like, -%. Like, don't give him the opportunity to, like, be
make
a
an
thing
internet
on the
video.
Internet.
Right. We're in a campaign with 17 people.
Right.
Lindsey Graham is the least interesting person in the field. Like,
But
he's the one that we forget every time that we try to name all the candidates.
But it's Trump's presence that are driving these people
to
do these things. And that's what's so brilliant.
It's so wonderful.
Yeah.
I know. I've also been thinking a lot about, you know, Huffington Post moved his campaign to the entertainment page famously last week.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been thinking a lot about what it is to be moving the leading figure in a presidential race to the entertainment page and acting like it's not credible.
Right.
I think that they were maybe a little quick to dismiss him. And not that I think he's going to win.
No, I think so,
and not
too.
That I think that he could be... But he's having a huge impact on this race in a way that they were not willing to give him credit for. There are political consequences to what he's doing here.
Yeah.
It's not just him saying racist things about Mexicans and then wearing
not.
A toupee. I wish that it was some days, but other days I'm like, who doesn't want a video of Lindsey Graham destroying his cell phone 100 ways? That's great. Like, Rand Paul taking a chainsaw to the tax code? Yes, please.
That's what you're looking for.
That's what you're looking for in an internet video. But I mean, like, he's not just a nobody candidate. He's not.
No.
Chris Christie is a nobody candidate in this race.
Right.
He's the tri-state area candidate who's a nobody.
Yeah, we're going to get to him in a second.
We're going to get to him in a second. He's just doing what he does, just walking around. But Donald Trump is not a nobody candidate. He's having a huge impact on this race. And he's in the lead. He is currently the person who is most likely to win at this moment the Republican primary.
That's right.
That's bonkers banana town. And that is also a reason why his campaign is not just a sideshow at this point.
No, I agree.
The Republican Party is a sideshow.
Totally.
But we can't move all of it to the entertainment page, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's the problem, is the party. It's not even him.
That's right.
He's seizing an opportunity that is a political opportunity that was presented to him by a party that has lost its damn mind.
That's right.
Anyway.
And they're taking a hit for it, too, which we're also going to get to in a little
bit.
Yes. But moving on in presidential politics here, and on to things that, you know, we were just talking about how Mike Huckabee is, you know, turning into the crazy candidate instead of the, you know, economic populist candidate.
So he went where
he
Republicans
be.
Like to go in these situations and started making Nazi metaphors.
Bingo. Yeah. He said, this president's, this was obviously about the Iran deal.
Yeah.
He said, this president's foreign policy is the most feckless in American history. It is so naive that he would trust the Iranians, which he doesn't, but regardless. He says, by doing so, he will take the Israelis and march them to the door of the oven.
They love a good Nazi reference.
That's not it.
That's not it.
No.
Meanwhile, this is a man whose entire, like, worldview is predicated on sending all of the Jews to Israel so that they can get destroyed first in the apocalypse.
Correct. That's right.
He literally wants to march them to the oven doors.
That's right, because then the end times come, and then
so
we all
the
get
to,
like, go be with our maker.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This is, his entire worldview is focused on that.
Right.
The only reason he has any support for Israel is because of that.
That's right.
Like, he's a crazy end times person.
Yeah.
So, like, this is already, like, I always take issue with Republicans using Nazi references in any way,
well,
because
as you should.
They are the America's Nazis of, you know, like, they're America's haters.
Haters.
Open
right.
haters. They're openly
sure.
hating people.
Yeah.
That's an acceptable thing for them to do.
Yeah.
This is, like, part of their agenda. But I also am just sort of like, this is, like, his actual plan.
I know.
He's hoping this happens.
Yeah, it's disingenuous.
This is disingenuous of him.
Yeah.
We don't need to hear Mike Huckabee talk about Nazi things.
No, we don't.
Anyway,
we
Chris
don't
Christie,
need to hear Chris Christie talk about anything.
Nope.
But
we
he's doing
did
it.
This week hear him get into one of what we hope is many arguments with people in Iowa who aren't
going to like him.
Aren't
going to
like him
second.
Because they're sort of polite to a fault and like to just be respectful and respectable.
That's right.
And
but he got into a 5-minute argument with like
some rando
at a town hall meeting this week
about his voting record on gun rights.
Yeah, and he got like raised
really
voices,
incensed.
Said some insensitive things to this person. He has a temper.
And this is also
exactly.
You can do this in New Jersey, and everyone will rise to the challenge.
Right.
But in Iowa, this guy rose to the challenge.
He did,
but
I'm
everyone
surprised.
Around him was probably like, surely not.
No, they were squeamish. I mean, they were like
everyone was
squirming
probably
in
very
their
uncomfortable.
Seat. Yes,
yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, so yeah, this guy basically like accused him of not being strong enough.
To support gun rights.
To support gun rights. Yeah, exactly. So, and Chris Christie said he had a couple of, you know, good, strongly worded, you know, responses to this guy. But he said, come up with one fact that shows one thing I've done as governor of New Jersey that does...
That's
oh, that's done anything not to support the right of legal gun owners. Don't come in front of this group and of people and lie about my record, which is what you just did.
And then they have
so
a back and
the
forth
guy a liar.
For like 5 minutes.
It went on for 5 minutes.
Where
yeah.
Chris Christie is like, I don't know where you're getting your information. Your information is wrong.
Yeah.
And then there was at one point he answered a question that the voter really didn't like, and
the guy kind of shrugged his shoulders. Yeah.
And Chris Christie goes, I see you shrugging your shoulders. Why are you shrugging your what are you shrugging your shoulders about? You have your point of view, but have some facts about it. Like, what the hell is he even talking about?
It's so good. And then he said,
oh, yeah.
And he sort of shut down the whole thing finally at the end. And he said, if you want to debate me, come to the top 10 and run for president and come to Cleveland on August 6th, and I'll happily debate you.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like any person could pull at least probably 11
well,
places. You only have to have like 0.01%.
I was gonna, one person who's not in the top 10 is Chris Christie. He's not going to be at that debate.
Is he?
There's
he's
no
probably
way he's,
close.
He might. No. There's. There are 17 people.
Yeah,
you can't think of... There are at least 12 other people I can think of that have to be polling higher than him.
I don't know, though, because there's so many of them are, like, not...
Nobody's.
Nope.
I get that.
Right?
But we're talking about a field that's entirely made up of crazy people.
I'm sure he's a...
He's not he's crazy
a,
enough.
He's a cusp
He's
person,
a cusp person.
Probably.
And
yeah.
as we've discussed, if you're a cusp person, you could be in 9th or 17th place.
That's right.
Nobody knows who these top 10 are going to be.
No.
I tend to feel like if they're going to have to let Trump into these debates, they're not going to want Christie also.
Oh.
I don't think we need both of
let's
them.
Let's have those two.
I mean,
have
let's
it out.
Have both of them.
Yeah.
But like, if I were Rentz Priebus or somebody and
just
I was
trying
like,
to figure out what
was trying
polls
to figure
to
out
use.
What polls to use and also what to do
yeah.
about this insanity that has emerged.
Right.
I would be like, you know what?
Let's not
let's keep
get both of those two
the New York nutsos
Right.
You know, at a safe distance. Distance. I agree. I don't need those two to be going at it.
No.
Because those two will argue each other down.
They will.
They're not going to be... And they will not feel bad about it. They will feel like they had a healthy argument.
Yeah.
And Iowa voters will be like, what the fuck is happening here?
Totally. Yeah.
It's the kind of debate that you could see in the tri-state area. Yeah. And everyone would be like, well, they're having a healthy discussion.
That's right.
But you're not going to be able to get away with that in Iowa. No.
So after all of the things that we've just told you about how great and wonderful the Republican Party is...
to find out that... people aren't loving the Republican Party.
Nobody likes them. Not even Republicans like them anymore.
Nope. There's yeah. They nationally have a 32% favorable rating and a 60% unfavorable rating.
Right.
And that the favorable rating has fallen 9 points since January.
Yes. So just in a half a year, almost 10.
And but
10%
for comparison's sake, the Democrats are almost neck and neck, and they're not underwater like the Republicans are, but they have a 48% favorable and 47% unfavorable rating. So they're doing better.
But what is, I think, more important is that the Democrats have a much higher favorability of their own party, which is good when you're trying to get people to the polls to vote in presidential elections or any elections. You have to have the members of your party want to go vote for that party.
Exactly.
And the Democrats do much better with that. They have Democrats are 86% happy with their own party, while only 68% of Republicans do that or think All that right. about their party. And that is down from 86% in January. So that's an 18%... Yeah, an 18%
Good
drop.
Good math, Brent.
Thank you. Since January, which is a huge drop.
That's
and
huge,
also, right? I would like to... that is when they came into power, I would like to
yes.
point out. I think it's
right.
important
it's
to note.
It's only gotten worse for them.
Since they started running things, they really should stick
to being the minority party.
Totally.
They are
better
much better at a minority party
yeah.
role.
They're much better at stopping things down and just being right. thorns in sides. They can't actually run anything.
No,
they knew this was going to be the case.
Their goal has not been to do things for years. They're rusty.
No, they have said as
they
much.
They have said as
I
much.
Mean, we've talked about how it's John Boehner on multiple occasions likes to say that he doesn't want to do anything.
No,
like
he only wants
to
undo things.
Right, exactly.
That's his plan.
Yeah. So anyway, but I think, and perhaps even more importantly than that, is how independents feel about both of these parties. Because as we know, those fucking independents are the ones who decide everything. I hate them.
P.S.
But
they're not.
They're
I disagree
not.
With that statement.
I
think that far left Democratic voters who are too lazy to vote are the ones that decide everything.
I agree. And I also agree with the fact that, you know, the however many percentage of the people who claim to be independent just claim that way because they don't like to associate themselves with a party, but obviously
have an allegiance to one party.
Half, if not more, of independents probably vote for the same party in every single election.
Yeah.
I would contend.
Exactly.
I don't have facts to back that up. But anyway, they are much more into the Democrats right now, the independents. They have a favorable... the Democrats have a 38% favorable rating, which isn't great, but the Republicans only have a 29% favorable rating.
So they're 10 points up on the Republicans.
On the Republicans with the independents. So that's good heading into
a presidential year.
Well,
this is why you don't want to win Congress... right before a presidential election.
Right. And also
two years is not long enough to do anything other than look like an idiot.
And also before a bunch of Senate races, which already look bad for you anyway.
Exactly.
Like, they have have a bad map in 2016.
2 years that's how a George Bush gets elected. I mean, think about the first 2 years of Obama's term. He looked like a fucking idiot for the first 2 years of his term. He wasn't getting anything done. No one was getting anything done. It takes more than 2 years to get something done in this government.
Yeah.
So, like... any time that you have only 2 years to make your case before a more important election comes along,
that's
you're
right.
not going to accomplish much.
Yeah.
So this is always what happens.
Yeah.
Everyone, you know, the Congress goes red, and then in the next presidential year, we all fuck everything up, and, you know, they fuck everything up in the next 2 years, and then we all vote them out of power.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fingers crossed, guys.
I don't know what's going to happen.
I don't know what's happening in this presidential election, so I feel like all bets are off at this point.
I agree.
I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, if you were thinking maybe we didn't have any mass shootings this week, you were wrong.
Yeah, we were not even
close.
Never once thought about leading with this story, actually, which was potentially the biggest story of last week.
Right.
If you were just paying attention to like what the news was covering,
right.
Fuck it. I mean,
it's fatigue.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and
I mean,
this is
important to talk about because we should talk about it in the sense that you and I always talk about it, which is gun control.
That's all there is to talk about that we're not, and we're not talking about it. So I don't know why we would bother leading with a story that's about a thing that if 20 kids getting shot isn't going to make us talk about it, then I certainly don't think that a couple people getting shot at a train wreck screening in Louisiana is going to do it. But apparently you're not safe seeing train wreck.
Nope.
Or anything. You're not safe being in public.
No, I know.
Especially in the South. I would not go.
Andy Borowitz, one of his blogs this week, like right after this, was something about, like, you know, NRA introduces ban on movies.
Yeah. that's brilliant.
Yeah, I know. It's good. But, you know, this is just another same old case where it's just sort of like, we should have known, you know, he had a history of domestic abuse and he probably shouldn't have had a gun and he'd been having a lot of erratic behavior and he, like,
and been praising Hitler, Timothy McVeigh, and the Westboro Baptist Church, the Holy Trinity.
I love that the Westboro Baptist Church
gets roped in with Hitler and Timothy McVeigh.
Yeah, but you know, it's just sort of like, and this just further goes to prove our point that you sometimes don't know. And even if you do know, sometimes you can't prevent them from getting the gun. In the police report from when his wife had, at the time,
she issued a protective order,
claimed that she had removed all of the weapons from the house because he had guns at the time.
And she was so worried about his behavior.
So should we have known that he shouldn't be able to have a gun?
Yes.
Yes, we should have. But we didn't. So, no.
We wanted to make sure he had the right to have those guns to protect himself.
That's right.
From, I'm not sure what, because he was the threat. But anyway, here we are. A world where anyone in America can shoot anyone. Also, we had a really weird shooting here in L.A.
Yeah, and not hardly even a shooting. In the sense that a gun went off.
Right. And also, everyone, when they first told me about the story, was like, there was a shooting in Studio City. And I was like, a shooting?
Oh,
no, surely not. Well, it was a guy who was crazy who fired a gun twice into the air and then twice into the ground.
Yeah, sitting at a bus stop.
It was a crazy guy.
Everyone panicked. The entire police force came, obviously. Yeah. And he just sort of, like, did it, like, real, like, nonchalant.
Yeah.
I mean, I would have also gone insane, too, had I been anywhere near someone just, like, randomly shooting a gun off.
I mean, I would have
I don't fault the people for, like, panic.
No.
Certainly.
You certainly should panic when someone's just arbitrarily firing a gun.
That's right.
One of the reasons that that doesn't happen more often here is, of course, because it's very difficult to get a gun here. But as I digress, I feel like it's fair to panic. It's also, though, sort of like,
A good example
of why you don't go to the Valley.
I was going
to
say, yes, exactly. Don't go to Studio City. Witnesses said that it just appeared as though he was waiting for the police.
Yeah.
And then they shot him because
he wouldn't put down his weapon.
He wouldn't put down his weapon, and I think he, like, tried to leave or something
like that.
We've been
having a slate of crazy gun violence-related things here, because remember that guy in Hollywood who just, with a shotgun, like, shot that woman in the head in Hollywood for no particular reason, as far as we could tell?
Yeah, no.
We've all been panicking about that.
That's not good. Yeah. But just stay in West Hollywood.
Yeah.
The gays aren't shooting people.
No, gays are not. I mean, God, we hope not.
Once that happens,
that's the end. Leave the world at that point.
That's right.
That's the end times.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, God. Back to the end times.
Right.
If you're talking to Mike Huckabee anyway. Because the architects of the Iran deal, not the president, but John Kerry
and the energy secretary.
Ernest Moniz, who's the energy secretary.
Oh, and Jacob Blue, the treasury secretary.
Went to Congress this week, because now, as we know, we have this deal, but Congress has to approve it, even though the president says he's going to veto it. It's probably, even if it doesn't pass, it's going into
effect.
Not law, but effect.
It's going into effect because they have to basically override his veto
in order to be able to actually veto the law. Right. But anyway, so they all went to speak to Congress this week, and, you know, it didn't go great.
No.
Which is not really totally surprising. You know, the Republicans gave John Kerry a real hard time, and there are also Democrats who are a little skeptical of this too, but it's like John Kerry has said, you know, that there's no magic unicorn deal that was going to be better than what we got.
You know,
we talked a lot last week about what people were upset about. We don't have to do that again, but I mean, you know, but Bob Corker was, who is a Republican, he was not having John Kerry at all, no. And he said, not unlike a hotel guest that leaves with only a hotel bathrobe on his back, I believe that you've been fleeced. Which is, like, pretty harsh words to, like, tell
also,
the...
A weird metaphor.
But, like, I mean, that's a... I know you were probably former colleagues of his, so, like, whatever, but, like, it's a secretary of state.
Don't be an asshole.
Just a little decorum, I guess, right?
But this, like, is supposed people were to be not... the house that has all the decorum.
Right.
The Senate is where
not...
everyone just respectfully
and
smiles at
Bob
each other.
Bob Menendez also didn't have any decorum. He's
Bob
a Democrat,
Menendez
but he doesn't have decorum.
P.S. doesn't have a right to be serving any people anymore, because he's being brought up on ethics charges.
Right? I mean, the Republicans were happy to have him at this meeting, because...
Of course, because he's, like, so crazily pro-Israel that he oftentimes ends up siding with the Republicans on foreign policy issues.
Yeah, exactly. But he was really curt with Kerry, because, like, they were having a, like, back and forth specifically about the snapback, which is when you, like, if they break if the Iranians break the deal, then the sanctions snap back. Yes, exactly.
I had to snap. Made a snapping sound for some reason. I felt like snap back felt like an important.
Yeah, but they were fighting about that, and they were sort of having a back and forth. And Menendez thought that Kerry a couple times was interrupting him, and he kept telling him to stop interrupting him because he was like eating into his time. And then at one point he said, "No, no, please, I'm sorry, I have limited time. You've been with the Iranians for 2 years. I have 7 minutes." So sort of like as if like, you know, John Kerry's just been really palling around with the Iranians, basically. And, like, Bob Menendez hasn't gotten to do that. Right. So he's going to... He basically just wanted to be able to, like, speak freely for, with a camera in front of him, basically,
speak
is what
freely
Bob Menendez
being wanted. Harsh, like, critical in a way that was borderline inappropriate.
Right, exactly. That, of course, like, John Kerry was obviously going to, like, try and refute whatever insanity Bob Menendez was...
Right, you don't let an insane person talk unencumbered for 7 minutes about... how insane they are.
Yeah.
That's not what you
Marco Rubio, of course, who's running for president, had to get into the game.
Yeah.
Because he sort
of... He's doing the classic John McCain strategy of pretending he's handling an issue that has nothing to do with him.
Right, exactly. And pretending that he sort of, like, already is or is soon to be president.
Remember when the crash happened and John McCain made everyone rush back to...
Right,
the White
stop
House,
the campaign
stop
down.
Stop the campaign so that they could have an awkward meeting where they were like, what are you doing here?
Right.
That's what's happening here.
Yeah, because Marco Rubio... didn't mention himself by name, but he did repeatedly warn John Kerry that once the next, once the Republican presidential candidate became, or, you know, once a Republican became president, that they could, the Iran nuclear deal could go away when President Obama leaves office, which is just sort of funny coming from him who was running for president. So it just seemed like a sort of like, you know, like when I'm president.
Right, a vague threat, right. Like a weird, sad threat.
Yes. So anyway... You know, that happened. It seems ridiculous that they have to go. I realize that they are going to, like, try and drum up support, because I get why you would want all of that support, but, like, on some level, you're not going to convince any of these goons. Like, you're not going to talk Bob Menendez into your side, and you probably have enough people to override this veto. So, like, on some level, just, like, Bob Menendez and Marco Rubio and Bob Corker. Like, just...
no one should be letting Bob Menendez talk about anything.
No.
Unless it's his resignation from office.
Thank you. Yeah.
Anyway, you know what else happened this week? Yeah. Obama went to Kenya.
Yeah.
He's the first sitting president to do that.
I know, which, as you
and
I said, seems
crazy.
A little weird,
Nairobi
right?
is in Kenya. That's a major city.
Especially considering that, you know, he was born there.
Right. Especially because he's from there.
Why hasn't he been going back, like, on, you know, summer vacay every year?
Exactly.
Like,
why does he keep going to Hawaii?
I know.
The place of his actual birth, when he could be going to the place of his fake birth in Kenya.
I know.
So weird.
Yeah, exactly. But it was an official state visit, and he got met up with a lot of his relatives who are from there, because, as we know, his father is from there. So I think he spent time with his grandparents. He, I think, made some sort of joke, like, you know, he's had a lot of people, like, you know, come out of the woodwork to meet him, which is fine. But, you know, a lot of family members in Kenya.
A lot of
apparently.
Family members. I would have pretended to be his family member if I were in Kenya. I'm not an idiot.
Yeah,
I mean,
no.
If I could vaguely make a claim to being the U.S. president's cousin, then I'd just go for it.
Exactly.
What do I have to lose?
But, you know, so he got to see a lot of the family, and then he also, you know, gave a lot of speeches, and they had an official state dinner, and he met up with the president of Kenya, and there was some speculation going into this trip as to whether how firm he would be on some of the things that we, like, obviously, like, disagree with him on, whether it was gay rights. They also have, like, a lot of political corruption that he has, like, spoken out on before. Yeah. So it was like, is he going to say these things, you know, in front of the president on their land? And he did. He sure did.
Lame duck presidencies. Never hurt anyone.
No. No fucks. He's in the no fuck
zone.
That's
I've been waiting for this for a long time.
That's
with
the best.
Yeah. I love any president besides George Bush, who was not the lame duck president you're looking for.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, speaking about gay rights, he, like, noted his own background as an African-American, and also, like, even talked about it, like, in terms of, like, slavery and segregation in the past, and said, like, when the government gets in the habit of treating people differently, those habits can spread. And he was talking about that in regards to gay rights, but he was obviously talking about it in regards to other civil rights issues and what's going on in Kenya. Because in Kenya, you can be thrown in jail for almost a lifetime if you're gay.
Yeah.
So, you know, the Kenyan president sort of basically said, well, we don't really care what you think.
Sorry about that.
Fine, but, well, he just basically said it's not on the minds of Kenyans, which it's on the minds of gay Kenyans, which I think is the point, obviously.
Yes. It's though has not reached the critical mass of general concern, I think, there. Yeah. So he's just not caring about it.
Right. Well, and he also talked a lot about Kenyan's counterterrorism practices, because they've had a lot of terrorism issues there. And so he talked a lot about that. And he talked about political corruption. And he said specifically that you're going to have some visible prosecutions of some people, you know, who are in politics there. So he really sort of went for it.
Yeah.
He didn't.
I know, I guess. Yeah. Well, he was on his home turf, so he
That's
could.
Right. He could. That's exactly right.
The land of his faith.
Felt
birth.
Comfortable.
Felt real at home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
So, and he's the first Kenyan American to be the president of the U.S., which
That's
is.
Right. Which he noted.
Which he noted
he was
while
there.
He was there.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So in any case, that is the news this week.
That's right.
We will be back next week with
news. Other news.
Slash potentially some off-topic rants, as
That's
we
right.
seem to be into those right
Guys,
now.
Guys, we're getting close to the first Republican debate that we talked
about.
Oh my
God, I'm so excited about that.
Not next week, but the week after that. I think we will be able to talk about it. It's on August 6th.
Yeah.
So we will.
I don't quite know the date right now, but I feel confident that within the next 2 to 3 weeks.
I think today's the 25th. So I think it's within the next
today's
2 weeks.
Today's the 26th.
The 26th.
God,
yeah.
We're even closer than we thought.
Oh yeah. So it's the week after next.
Yeah.
That's
this
exciting.
This is so exciting. I can't. By the way, why are they holding debates so early?
Well, that's another question.
Like, they already learned the hard way not to hold any debates.
Right? I know.
Like, don't even hold a debate at this point.
That's when the insanity happens.
That's when the, like, things are only going to get worse.
The insanity's already happening, so
that's
I guess
true. Why fight the insanity?
The debate's not going to hurt anybody, right?
Exactly. Anyway, we'll be back next week with some exciting political news and our excitement about the forthcoming debate.
That's right.
All right. We'll talk to you then.
Bye.
Bye.